Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
3, 2, 1. This is Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode, episode 5, if you're keeping score at home, of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Welcome. Thanks for clicking on here at WGN Plus. For the next hour, we will be having lots of interesting fun, as we do on every podcast here. Today's podcast is going to be music-oriented. Anybody who knows me knows that I love music. It's been a major part of my life for as long as I can remember. I don't really play. I mean, I play a little piano. It's very small. It's 5 feet by four. No, 5 inches by four. No, that's an old joke. I took piano lessons, of course, because I'm an Elton John fan, and I could play, but it wasn't natural to me. And that was very frustrating because I would go and get the sheet music and I'd have to really labor over these things. And to the point where I didn't have a feel for it. I couldn't just sit down at the piano and look at the keys and start to play. I needed the notes. Or what happened is I basically memorized the songs after practicing so much. I memorized the songs as to where my fingers would go. I wasn't even really reading the music anymore after I got it in my head. And I'm like, now this is, I don't really just, I must not have the natural ability. But regardless, I love music, and it's been, as I said, a major part of my life. I wrote a music column for a local newspaper in the western suburbs of Chicago here when I was still in college. I was on the college radio station when I went to school and hosted a music show. And then for more than 20 years, I was a music writer and reviewer for a local magazine here in Chicago called the Illinois Entertainer, which has been around for many, many years, decades, and talks about music. So certainly music has been a major part of my life. I do have my shoebox filled with, I think, almost every ticket stub of every concert I've ever seen. I'm pretty sure from a young age when I started going, I kept the ticket stubs. Those days, that's probably all you had. You didn't have your cell phone to take video. All you had as a memory maybe was a camera if you had one. A lot of people didn't even have cameras. I know it sounds like I'm from 1910. And you kept your ticket stub. And so not only, I mean, my name is Elton Jim because I've been to 164 Elton John concerts alone, but I mean, I think I've seen Springsteen 59 times, and I've seen just about everybody there is to see in rock, old and new. And I think I probably have been to, I would say, I should do that. I should go home and go to my shoebox and count all my ticket stubs. I bet you with the Elton shows and the Springsteen shows, which already there are over 250 shows, I would have to say that I have probably seen, or those are about 200 shows, I have probably seen at least 500 to 600 concerts, maybe 700, that much. Granted, I don't go as much as I used to, but there was a time when there was a venue here in the suburbs of Chicago called Poplar Creek, which is an outdoor theater. They used to call them sheds, if you will. And there were some summers there in the mid-80s where I might as well have not even come home. I went there two or three times a week. I was there sometimes consecutive days. I got to know a lot of the ticket takers. I went there so often. But anyway, so music is a big deal. And the reason why I'm saying this is, like I said, we're going to talk a little music today. Actually, play a little. Later in the podcast, we're going to do another popular segment of our pop culture club with Michaela, and we'll be talking about the musical Hamilton, which is in the news these days for several reasons. And the biggest reason locally here in the Chicago area is that it will be coming to Chicago in the first touring company in September, and in the coming week, tickets will be going on sale for Hamilton. So Chicago is going to become Hamilton Central, and it's going to be a big frenzy. And so Mick and I will be talking about that. And we'll add our little spin to what we think is going to happen with Hamilton. But for the first part of the podcast, I wanted to talk about something that I've been doing. I've got, because of writing about music for so many years, I did get a lot of free albums. Back then it was vinyl, then it became CDs, and then it became streaming, which was kind of boring because then they just sent you this thing on a computer. What fun was that? I like to touch something. And so I had over over 4,000 CDs. And so when the iPod generation came in, I was initially a little reluctant to join in because I had all these CDs already. What did I need? I didn't need to go and download anything. I had everything. But my godson said, you know, he's a younger guy, and he said, you know, it would be awesome if you put your whole collection, you'd have access to your whole collection, you know, all at one time. And it made sense, but it took a lot of effort. So I downloaded almost 24. I bought a good amount. I did go on the Apple Store and filled in my collection with some that I downloaded just in an instant. But for the most part, those 23 songs are all uploaded from my physical CDs, which took, and I did this for about a week and a half straight and almost 24 hours a day, to the point where I had stacks of CDs around my easy chair, if you will, and I had the computer on a little card table thing, and I would put a new CD in, you know, hit the upload, and there were sometimes I was falling asleep in 2 or 3 in the morning while these things were taking time to each one individually, and I would wake up when the little bell rang, which said, oh, by the way, this has already been done, all the 10 songs or 12 songs, bing, and that would wake me up. So it was a long, long time and a big effort, but I did get them all. And I certainly have bought CDs since then and downloaded other things, but I've got over almost 24,000 songs. And so last summer, almost a year ago now, I was out in the backyard, and I had my iPod on, and I just hit shuffle, and I was out there for the whole day, from the morning till evening, just hanging out, and just had it on shuffle, and the thing just kept playing any different song. And I pride myself on having a record collection that, as I've always said, spans from Sex Pistols to Pavarotti. You name it, it's there. There's country, there's rock, there's pop, there's jazz. Not a lot of rap. Not a big fan of the rap stuff, like the young people these days, which will play into my Hamilton discussion later. But so I was like, wow, over the course of 7 or 8 hours I was out in the yard that day, I heard some songs I hadn't listened to or hadn't heard in years, sometimes decades. And I was like, wow, this was really cool. I forgot about that song or that album or that artist. Some of them are one-hit wonders. And so I said, you know, it would be kind of cool. I should share this with people. So on my Facebook page, on June 15th, 2015, so we're now over a year, every day for the last year, I have chosen a different song from my iPod. And I have legitimately every morning go on my iPod and scroll down through the songs or through the artist section or through the playlist section and pick a song, pick an artist. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, there's a great one. And I post it on my website, on my Facebook page, and I even gave it a title, and I even have a logo for it. And every morning, if you go on my Facebook page, you will see a posting of Elton Jim's jam-packed iPod. And so I pick a song. I add a short little brief description about the song or about the artist, why I like it, what was happening at the time, just a little short description. And then I have a YouTube link to that song so you can hear it. And I've enjoyed doing it every day because it certainly has helped. It's forced me to dig deep into my record collection and listen to music every day and rediscover some songs. And the whole idea of this was not to pick the most popular song or necessarily the most popular artist. The whole idea was, because you can hear that on the radio, my view was, my gosh, with the way music radio is today, and there's Spotify and Mystify and UFI and IFI and EveryFi, but you, a lot of times you're hearing the same songs. And so I was like, I'd like to, as part of this feature, the main thing is to pick songs that people may have forgotten or in some cases may have never heard. Now, it's not surprising that a lot of the songs are from my sweet spot of when I was growing up and listening to music. But my view also was, if there's a lot of stuff from the last 10 or 15 years, well, you can listen to that anyway, and even from the last 20 in the 90s. But there might be some songs, especially for some younger people, that they never even heard of some of these songs from the 60s and the 50s and the 70s especially and the 80s. And I have, as I looked at, I have a list. I've every day when I choose the song, I also have a running tab of all the songs, and I have listed that list now on my Facebook page as well. And I had noticed that a lot of the music that I was picking was from the mid to late 70s for one specific reason. If you weren't around, you won't understand it, but for those of you who are a little older, you will. Disco so dominated the culture from, say, especially after Saturday Night Fever came out in 1977. And disco was beginning to inch into the mainstream in the mid-70s, around 75 and 76. Van McCoy's The Hustle is the one that started it all, folks. If you want to blame somebody, I think it was Van McCoy. But then, obviously, when Saturday Night Fever came out in 1977 and the Bee Gees and that album and that movie just exploded, and then disco really... Then you had radio stations flipping formats and just playing nothing but disco. And in the midst of that, at least from 77 through 1980 or even 1981, the popular radio stations were all playing disco songs. And there was a lot of great rock music that was not getting a lot of attention. There were rock radio stations that were playing some of these, but they weren't inching into the mainstream, becoming well-known hits or big hits, because the disco thing was so dominant, and it really was. And if you think about it, that period from 76 through 80 or 81 is right at the time when you had the growth or the emergence of punk rock. And then after the punk thing sort of died out in Britain, where it was also much bigger than it was here, but you had groups like the Ramones and things like that here. But then you had the beginnings of the new wave in Britain, which is kind of like the second British invasion, which then so dominated the culture when MTV then came about, and so many of these British acts had videos and were making videos long before American bands were. And so when MTV started, a lot of these bands like Duran Duran, these bands already had videos, and MTV needed content. And so suddenly these British new wave bands were getting played on MTV because they needed videos. And it was that really got radio stations here in the United States to start playing it. There was stuff by Culture Club and some of these other 80s bands that were not being played here initially. It was not viewed as popular music. It was still, you know, you got it here by import on record. So as I'm looking through my list here, I do notice a lot of songs from that period, but that's the whole idea, is that there might be some artists, one-hit wonders, some bands that never really made it because they just didn't get a chance. But my gosh, there was some great music that was made. So I thought it would be fun for a while here to go down my list and just share some of these songs that I think are by great artists or some great one-hit wonder songs, just so you get an idea of what this feature is about. And by all means, please visit my Facebook page. It's Jim Turano, T-U-R-A-N-O. Friend me if you'd like, or just go on and visit. I believe I hit the public posting there, so I don't think it's, under any security where the general public can't see them. But if you'd like to go on every day, I would love to have you on. And a lot of people, I every morning I go on and I put one on, a new song on, and I see a lot of the same names, which is very cool. So I see a lot of the same people making a daily stop and liking the song. And then people will begin to make some comments. Oh, I never heard this song, but wow, what a great song. Or, I mean, this is a good song, but I like this other song with this band. And it's a nice little conversation starter, too. So we are able to share some memories about music, about our that these songs mean to us individually as well as, you know, communally. And hey, that's what social media is all about. So I really enjoyed doing the Elton Jim's jam-packed iPod feature on my Facebook page. So by all means, please stop by. But here's just a little taste, and I think you will see that I'm a rocker, baby. I'm a rocker for the most part. But I'm not ashamed of it. I love a nice, cheesy, sugary pop song, especially from the 60s and 70s when they were really making them, when they were, you know, those songs that just have an amazing hook or an amazing chorus. And most recently, a song like Happy would have fallen into that category where it almost becomes ear candy. But you can't resist it. You know, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, there came a point where you heard that Pharrell song and you were like, oh, I don't want to hear it again. But gosh, when it was on, you couldn't turn it off. And that's a lot of the songs that I've also tried to find from the mid-70s and late 60s, and even in the 50s, where there were so many of those, but especially the late 60s and early 70s. A lot of these cheesy songs, which I don't think are cheesy. I am proud to say that if it is cheesy music, then I will take Cheddar and Swiss, okay? But anyway, so but my tastes run the gamut, but I thought we would play a few of these songs just to give you a taste of what my musical choices are and my musical tastes are, as well as giving a sense of some of these songs that you've may never heard. And maybe it will influence you to come to my Facebook page every day and take a look as to what I'm getting from my jam-packed iPod. So why don't we start? The first song that I chose I thought was very representative of what the spirit of this music feature was all about. As I said, highlighting songs by artists that you may never heard of, or songs by a well-known artist that you may never heard of, and give some of these songs their due. Let them at least, for the few people that might go onto my Facebook page, at least there'll be some recognition and some appreciation of some great music. So the first one is by a guy named Marshall Crenshaw, and this is called "Someday, Someway." Now, my toe is immediately tapping when I hear that song. That came out in 1982. It was from his debut album. You could hear a little Buddy Holly-ish song, you know, music influence, as well as his voice. And once again, though, a lot of people may have heard, not a lot of people, but some people have heard of Marshall Crenshaw. He's got a nice little cult following, but he never made it to that next level. And my gosh, that debut album, it's just called Marshall Crenshaw. Find it. It's out there. You can almost say, I think there's 10 songs in there. There's not a bad song on there. And that great little rockabilly rock sound that you heard on Someday, Someway. Still, over 30 years, as soon as I hear it, I smile, I move, and I'm tapping my foot. The next one I'd like to play here is by one of my favorite bands. In fact, I started to play this band on my college radio station in the early 80s before a lot of it was never on mainstream radio. And that was one of the cool things about being in college radio at that time, is that we were able to play anything we wanted. And there was all this at that point called alternative. That term was just becoming popular, that mainstream radio was not playing. And REM and U2 and some of these other bands were like that. And in fact, REM credits college radio for playing a major role in breaking them. And I certainly played the heck out of them. One of my favorite REM albums is still called Reckoning from 1984. And this is a song called Second Guessing. Okay, try not to tap your toe to that. Impossible. I know they went on to have bigger albums, certainly Losing My Religion and Stand and Smiley, what is that? Smiling Happy People? What was it? Shiny Happy People. And so many others. But this was their second album, Reckoning, and it was there's some great songs on there. There's South Central Rain, and I think Driver 8's on there too. Man, that's just a great album. It's called Reckoning. Check that album out. That's from 1984. I'm not stuck in the 80s here, but there were some great songs by some very popular bands, but you may not have remembered these songs. And I was never a huge fan of the Bangles, but they did have, once again, some great pop songs. Obviously, they had Manic Monday, which Prince wrote, and Walk Like an Egyptian. But I always like this one, and it's called If She Knew What She Wants. Now, that's just a great pop song. I mean, what can you say? Just a nice little great melody, great hook, well-produced, and she sounds great on it, too, the Bangles. That's from 1986, If She Knew What She Wants. One of my favorite singer-songwriters is a guy named Warren Zevon, who unfortunately passed away very young of cancer, and it's probably been over 10 years now. And you may remember he was on David Letterman's show just before he passed away. You may know Warren Zevon from songs like Werewolves of London or Excitable Boy. And I think Werewolves of London is obviously his most popular. He had a very abiding sense of humor. He's a great lyricist. He was an excellent musician. But his songs, and he really could write a great hook. And but I loved his lyrics were very sardonic and very satirical and biting and funny at the same time. And it was just to listen to his music. If you've never heard of Warren Zevon or if you've only heard his hits, please go find him and dig deep into that catalog. Here's one from 1982. It's called Looking for the Next Best Thing.
To please, I used to think it was funny till I realized it was all a tease. Don Quixote had his windmills, Ponce de Leon took his cruise.
I mean, come on, gang. How many rock songs quote Don Quixote, Sinbad? I mean, come on. That's writing, okay? They're not referencing Lost or something in the last 10 minutes. I mean, Zevon's quoting Don Quixote right there. You got to love that. That's Looking for the Next Best Thing. Please, if you are not aware of Warren Zevon's catalog, please, please, in this age of access where it takes five little strokes on a keyboard and you can listen to endless music. It's so easy today. And that's my point. There's so much great music out there that has been forgotten or not being heard, and the same stuff is being heard, and yet we have this amazing access. Use it, folks. Use it to find this one. As I said, from the late 70s and early 80s, there's a lot of great kind of punkish new wave music that was coming out at the time that was not getting airplay in a lot of places because disco was so dominant. But my gosh, I will dare you to not tap your foot to this one. It's by the Jags. It's called Back of My Hand.
They're all a comment if you're feeling blue. You tell me I don't pay attention to you. But if you only knew just what I'm going through, you wouldn't phone those guys when we're around with you, girl. But when I call you, I can sacrifice. You open out before you dry your eyes. I'm not a fit machine.
That's like a 2 or 3 minute burst. God, do I love that song. I bet you 95% of the people have never heard that song. The Jags, they came and went, one-hit wonder from the late 70s, early 80s. I think it was 1980, but my gosh, what a cool song. Back of My Hand, just got a great early kind of rock beat with a little punkish urgency. Oh, what a great song. Now, here's one from 1969. I was an only child, so that's why music was actually a big part of my life, because it was kind of like a sibling. When I got done playing with my friends, I went home, and there was no brothers and sister to play around with and do anything with. And, you know, I'm a little kid. I'm not going to talk to my parents about world issues. So I would go into my bedroom, and that's where I found my radio, and that's where I found my turntable. So I was like 5 or 6 or 7 already into music. And today, with the access, as I said before, about music, that may not seem strange. But back then it was. And there weren't a lot of 7 or 8 year old kids listening to music. That's why I've been an Elton John fan, since 1973. I was, 8, 9 years old. But I count the day I was officially an Elton John fan by the day I bought my first record, which was the vinyl 45 of Crocodile Rock in 1973. Although I did hear Elton before that. But anyway, so here's one that I remember going to my cousin's house, my cousin Louise, who was about 4 or 5 years older than me, and she was way into music, and she actually helped me with my awareness of music, because she was older, and so she was buying the big hits of the day. And even though, I was, 5 years old, I remember this song. I never knew what it was until years later. I was like, I even thought, was that a dream? Did I dream that song? Because I never heard it on the radio ever again. But I looked it up, and sure enough, it was a real song. I didn't dream it. And it's a song called, or by the Neon Philharmonic, and it's called Morning Girl.
Morning girl, how'd you sleep last night? You're several ages older now. Your eyes have started showing how. The little girl's growing now. Morning girl.
And you could really hear the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper influence there with the organ and just the whole sound of that. But wow, that song was so different sounding to me. Like I said, even as a young kid, that organ sound and even the vocal and the way the song was produced, I was like, wow, what the heck was that? Always remembered that song, and I was so glad to realize it really was a song from 1969, Morning Girl by Neon Philharmonic. Here's another one from 1979, as I said, this era where a lot of great, kind of post-punk music was being made, but not being heard by too many people because of the domination of disco. There's another one that I dare you to not jump around and tap your toes to this one. It's a song by The Records called Starry Eyes. Another one. Totally one-hit wonder. Didn't get a lot of airplay. But man, when they played that song, I never turned it off. Starry Eyes, The Records. Who are The Records? I don't know. But they made one good record, that's for sure. If you're fast-forwarding through your podcast today, and you're saying, what the heck is Elton Jim doing? I'm going through my jam-packed iPod. and picking out songs by some artists that you may have never heard or you may have forgotten about. And just to give you a sense of what sort of my musical tastes are. And as I said, every day on my Facebook page at Jim Turano, T-U-R-A-N-O, I put a new song out. It's been a year, June 15th, 2015. I had some computer problems in October, so there were not 365 songs, but there were 356. So 356 songs every day I put up there for you. Not for me. Well, something for me, too, because I've been enjoying doing it. But for you to share some music, because that's what music is all about. I think that's why vinyl is coming back, because people are getting into the tactile part of putting on a record and sitting around with people and listening, and you have to get up and turn it around. There's an experience to it, and that's what this is an effort in doing, on putting these new songs up there every day for my iPod to share. That's what this is all about. You go to a concert. You don't go to a concert by yourself. You go to a concert with hundreds of people or thousands of people to enjoy the experience together. And so hopefully that is what this feature on my Facebook page is doing every day. And hopefully you're having some fun right now. I'm having fun kind of spinning the discs, if you would. You know, I'm not hitting the actual song myself. My producer Mike's doing that for me. But I'm having fun talking them up and hitting the post and being a, well, you know, but, you know, there's two kinds of DJs. There's the hokey DJ who says, hey, it's 45 degrees in Chicago, and here is. And then there's the hipster DJ, the guy from the kind of underground station. Like, and there's a great new album out now by this band that nobody knows but you and me, and it's really cool, and I'm really enjoying it, and here's a song. I was somewhere in the middle. I was just me. I was just conversational. Hey, man, here's a cool song, and here it is. And to proof of that, you may not remember, there's a guy named Paul Williams, and he wrote some of the great songs of the 70s, Carpenter songs, you know, Rainy Days and Mondays, and he also had, he actually was involved with Daft Punk. I was surprised to see Paul Williams was a part of that major album. But he wrote some great, great hits. He also wrote the theme to Star is Born. He's done very well in terms of being a songwriter. He's not a great singer, per se, even though he tries. But he certainly knows how to write a nice song with a great hook and a great lyric. And one of my favorite Paul Williams songs, of course, is not sung by Paul, but became a major hit for one of the biggest bands of the early 70s. This is a song called Old Fashioned Love Song by Three Dog Night. Just an old Yeah, that's a great song. Paul Williams, Three Dog Night. I think we'll stop with one last song here, which is kind of a, this was a huge hit in the 60s. The writer and singer of this song, this guy named Roger Miller. It was a country song, but it kind of had crossover appeal. And this guy wound up having a huge TV career because he sort of had this kind of, you know, down home. If you remember in the late 60s, for some reason, mainstream entertainment really was embracing the whole Southern kind of lifestyle. You had the Beverly Hillbillies. You had Green Acres. You had all these kind of shows. You had Andy Griffith. All these shows that were embracing kind of the American rural areas. And so country music was beginning to get a higher profile, and that's when you had Johnny Cash and people like that becoming major stars, major TV shows. Johnny Cash had this TV, hello, I'm Johnny Cash, and he used to have his, was Johnny Cash cool? He used to have his guitar slung over on his back. Very cool. But anyway, so Roger Miller became a huge TV star. He would be on all these variety shows because he sort of had this kind of aw shucks kind of personality. Not a nice-looking guy. He was kind of had a cool sense of humor. And but this song, and he wrote a few other songs, but this one will always be the one associated with Roger Miller. And it's just got, it's got great attitude. And actually, it's got a Chicago connection. The first line from the song was from a sign that he saw at a Chicago train station. And when he saw that line, he goes, that's a song title, or that's a good song lyric. And from that came this song, which is a huge, huge hit for him and a great, great song that I never get tired of hearing. This is Roger Miller's King of the Road.
Trailers for sale or rent, rooms to let 50 cents, no phone, no pool, no pets, ain't got no cigarettes, but 2 hours of pushing broom buys an 8-12 four-bit room. I'm a man of means, by no means king of the road. Third boxcar, midnight train, destination Bangor, Maine.
How do you not snap your fingers at that song? Impossible.
I don't pay no union dues. I smoke.
Oh, great song. Roger Miller, King of the Road. So that's just a sampling. I actually had several other songs here, but I only have an hour, and I want to talk about other things. But we might do this again on the podcast, because I had a ball doing this. And as I said, I've got almost 24,000 songs on my iPod. I'm not going to run out. And I have 350, and now there's even more, songs on my list of doing this feature for the last year. So don't worry. I've got songs to play for you folks. But I thought that'd make cool to be ending on that Roger Miller song. In fact, I'm going to go home and put that on my iPod in the car. I want to hear the end of that song. But anyway, so that is just a taste of what of the 20, I think there's 23,600 and something. So I've rounded up, folks, to say almost 24. Well, 24,000 songs. So that's a sample of some of them. But as I said, my record collection runs the gamut from punk to opera to classical to you name it. But those are just a taste of some of the songs that I've put on my daily feature on my Facebook page called Elton Jim's Jam-Packed iPod. So please visit my Facebook page. Every day you will see it. In fact, the logo for it is me wearing my official and legitimate Elton John glasses. But then I also put, we made a little logo where there's some earbuds coming out of the glasses just to play into the whole, you know, iPod thing. So that's my iPod. I'd love to hear what yours is too, but visit my Facebook page every day and you will see a new song that you may have never heard of and hopefully will become a new favorite. We are going to take a quick break, and after this we're going to go to the Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler to talk a little Hamilton. And we're back here at Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Pod-tastic. Today's show, a little musically oriented. First half, digging into my iPod with some of my favorite songs on my jam-packed iPod of over 20 or almost 24,000 songs. But now we shift gears somewhat. We're still staying in the musical world, and we shift gears, and we go to the Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler. Are you there, Mick? Oh. Mickey.
We have got to teach you how to run that board someday, mister.
That's my charm. I've been running boards since I was in college, and I still don't hit the right button.
Still haven't gotten the hang of it.
Yeah,
huh?
And then Mike just goes, punch up the phone.
Well, I always know when I'm not on because I don't hear that little bing.
Oh, do you have a bing on your side?
Yeah.
Oh. Nice.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Anyway, when you hear the Karma Chameleon song, of course, that signals another popular and fun segment of the Pop Culture Club.
Why is it called that? I'm just curious.
Oh, you don't know?
Help me out.
Okay, I'll tell you why. See, when I was devising this, I was saying I'd like to talk about pop culture. But I'd like it to sound like it's kind of just this little cool exclusive club. And I went, okay. Whoa, wait a minute. Club? Pop culture. Pop culture club. And then
it's like you were inventing penicillin. It was all
yes.
by accident.
So not only does it make sense, it's a pop culture club. It's a little club talking about pop culture. But then within the title, there is a part of pop culture, meaning the culture club. Like I said, in 20 years from now, people are going to be dissecting this segment, and they're going to say, my gosh, this thing worked on so many levels.
It was seamless.
I mean, no one will, you know, I'll be like some of the people that I played music with, in the first segment. I'll be like Marshall Crenshaw. A lot of people liked him, but not all the people knew who he was.
Exactly. There you go.
I'm going to be forever on that heap, but I don't mind. That's fine.
That'll be your epitaph.
Yeah, I will be. I think I will be recognized and appreciated long after I'm dead. I don't think I'm going to be able to get that in my lifetime.
So in other words, when you die, that'll be a good career move.
Yes, it'll be a great career move. It's been a great career move for a lot of people, actually.
Yeah, take Kurt Cobain. It's like, my gosh, guy was on fire after that.
So I wanted to talk this week in our little pop culture. And I said, Mick Kaler is charter member of the Pop Culture Club. You can actually hear the fruits of his creative mind on the WGN Channel 9 News most mornings. On their morning news, they play a lot of Mick's parody songs that he writes along with a collaborator of his called Al Flash. And Mick, as I've said many times, has quite a radio pedigree here in the city of Chicago, having worked with some of the legends and most popular personalities, including Larry Lujack and Robert Murphy and many others. So Mick certainly has cred to be a charter member of the Pop Culture Club.
In other words, I've earned my stripes.
Yes, you have, sir. So here's what I wanted to talk about. I played earlier in the show some songs from my jam-packed iPod, and none of those songs were rap songs.
Okay.
And it's for a simple reason. I don't even know if I own a rap album.
I don't. I know I don't.
And I'm not trying to, you know, and I know, and, you know, producer Mike is in the other room, and he's in his 30s, and he's looking at me with disdain and hatred and saying this man is old and a curmudgeon and so out of it, and he is not in the scene. Is that a phrase, in the scene?
Aren't you with it? Aren't you hip?
Yeah, aren't you hip? Don't you dig? Dig? No. I work in a sewer. I'm the one that digs. So, but the thing is, you know, here's the thing. I don't like rap, and it's not because I'm older. Because when rap took hold of the mainstream, and it started, I know they're rewriting history too as far as when rap started in hip hop. Now they're saying it started in the 70s. There was no hip hop in the 70s,
no.
At least on the radio. Sorry. It may have been in somebody's garage, but it wasn't around. No one was hearing rap until the mid 80s. And that was my sweet spot for music. I was 19 or 20.
So you were digging on all sorts of different music.
Yes. I am as old as the Beastie Boys. Run DMC is older than me, okay? So it's not an age thing. I like music. Mick, I guess I'm a snob, okay? You know what I like? You know what I like about music? I like
what?
Instruments, a melody, and singers.
There you go.
Now call me old-fashioned, but I'm not into screaming, talking, and electronic beats.
Well, the first rap song I ever heard, or the first time I ever heard, quote, rapping, was in 1980, and it wasn't from one of those early artists. It was from Blondie.
Oh, right.
In the song Rapture. Remember
that's
the song
right.
Rapture?
Yeah, that's a good point. That
and
is true.
She sang Fab Five Freddy. And
yeah, that's right.
And she got it, obviously, from the New York streets and picked up on that, hey, this is the hip, you know, underground thing. It was underground. It wasn't
no.
out there on the radio.
No, it was not.
It was not.
And in fact, you know what? I was just reading a new issue of Entertainment Weekly, and they're sort of talking about some of the new summer shows are coming up. And
yeah.
There's a new show. I don't know what the title of it's called. I just saw it quickly. But they're talking. It's based in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about music, apparently. And
oh, I think, is that the roadie one?
No. That's Cameron Crowe. That one I want to see. That's on Showtime. It's sort of about Cameron Crowe, who used to write for Rolling Stone when he was 16 years old and went on the road with some of the greatest rock bands in the world. He's going to write. The show is all about the roadies, though. It's not about the stars. It's about the people that are putting those shows together for you. But, no, this is another one. I hadn't heard of this show. And so I just read the quick description, but the premise of the show is the battle between disco and hip hop in the 70s.
Didn't happen.
There was no, we can't know. There was no battle.
Yeah, that's like saying the Civil War was between the South and the Germans.
Yeah, but you know, but in order to get younger people, you have to mention hip hop now.
Yeah.
And so, but it's like, no, if there was a battle, and there was one, it was between disco and rock. And that's where the whole disco sucks thing came from. It was not about hip hop.
Right. It was rock.
Yeah. I'm not liking this rewriting of history. But in other words, though, as I said before, though, right now, obviously, hip hop and rap is, you know, the music of the day. And, you know.
Hey, just so you know, hip hop has actually even found its way into country songs, country music that's out right now.
Yeah, you have to.
There are artists who throw in little spriggets of, if that's such a word, just little pieces here and there, and sometimes the whole verse can be a rapped out thing.
Yeah, Miranda Lambert featuring Lil Wayne. Because here's another thing, in all of my albums, I don't think I have one song that features anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Now on the record, you know, it's always, you know, blah, 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 featuring, you know, 17 different names, too. I have no songs that say featuring. But here's my point. So I wanted to talk about Hamilton, because Hamilton is the phenomena, the rage of the day. It recently won 11 Tonys, surprisingly did not break the record held by the producers. Mel Brooks
is close, but it didn't.
Yeah, that was 12. It was nominated for 16. I certainly thought it was going to break that just because, you know, everybody talks about Hamilton.
It's just a huge buzz.
Yeah, I mean, there's a major
deal in New York.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And I think it's, and what's going to happen here, so my point is, so the first touring company of Hamilton, the show is on Broadway, it's been in New York since its inception. It was off Broadway, actually, before it went onto Broadway. And so it's first touring companies, and there will be ones in other cities too. But for the first one, we'll be here in Chicago. It opens in September. And next week, or this week, I should say, the tickets go on sale. And they're already talking about, you know, how difficult it's going to get to be to get tickets. And in New York, you hear these crazy stories of tickets being $500, $600, $700 a piece, even if you can get them. I mean, it has become a phenomenon. I give the guy a lot of credit, who wrote it and stars in it. This Lin-Manuel Miranda, he's certainly becoming the toast of the entertainment world. And it was I don't know how calculated he was. Do you know a lot about this guy?
I saw a couple features on him on CBS Sunday Morning and a couple other things, and I truly think he just said, here's a story about, you know, Alexander Hamilton that I think I could make into a contemporary thing. And like you said, it started off Broadway. It wasn't like we're going to, you know, the Winter Garden or any of these big theaters.
Right.
And I think it was one of those things that it just caught fire. It's like everybody said, wow, you get to see history, kind of like Schoolhouse Rock, but you get to see it done in a contemporary way with the dancing and the songs and all the choreography and all that. And it's just one of those things that, like you said, it became a phenomenon.
Well, here's the thing. Now, I think the guy, I've seen him in interviews. He seems, and I've seen that same interview that you were talking about that was on the CBS Sunday Morning show. The guy seems very sincere, and he saw this biography of Alexander Hamilton, and then decided, I'm going to write a play. But also, there's a part of me, as I said many times, I'm always glass half empty.
Right.
So I'm looking at this and saying, this guy is either really just in touch where he found his muse and he's, you know, this creative genius, or he's very shrewd.
Yeah.
Because what he did was very smart. Right now, if you're looking at the American culture, it's hip-hop music, it's diversity in terms of cultures and races, and What did he do? He took hip-hop. The cast is diverse. Once again, I don't know about you. I think it's going to be kind of strange to see. I don't know if I want my Thomas Jefferson with a giant afro. But in this play, that's what he has.
Right. And so he's integrated a lot of things. And there's something else he's integrated.
What's that?
Violence.
Yeah, right, exactly.
There's a shooting.
Yeah, there's a great. Well, and it's a great story too because it's a story that nobody really knows. All we ever really knew about Alexander Hamilton is that he got shot by Aaron Burr.
Right.
And nobody even knew who Aaron Burr was. Most people thought it was Raymond Burr from Perry Mason.
Shot him from his wheelchair.
Yeah. Yes. Would it be wrong if I shot Alexander Hamilton?
No, you're exactly right, and he did meld some things in there. But then again, you know, in fairness to this guy, you can take Star Wars and say,
oh, without a doubt,
when George Lucas wrote this, he took all the archetypes: good versus evil, father and son.
Oh yeah, no, it's all there. Yeah. So here's the thing: I know. I've lived in Chicago my whole life. I know this city. I know the people. I love this city, but we have a real chip on our shoulder when it comes to New York.
Yes, very
and I
much
hate
so.
That we have that because we should just celebrate who we are, and we shouldn't always compare ourselves to New York because the fact is you can't compare yourself to New York. New York is the center of the universe, and I love New York. I go to New York a lot, and I love it there, and it's no knock against Chicago to love New York.
Yeah, you can like both.
But here's the thing. So now this has been the rage. And I think that Hamilton, it may be a great piece of musical theater. I don't know. I haven't seen it. I've just seen bits and pieces, just heard some songs. But what I do know is that it's become a status symbol to in New York. Oh, have you seen Hamilton? Oh, it's fantastic.
Well, now, when I watch the morning news shows, whether it's weekdays or weekends, there's always somebody, whether it's a newscaster, sports person, weather person, somebody every week chimes in, I'm going to see Hamilton.
That's what I mean.
No, seriously, I just saw it last week. I think it was one of the guys from ABC Morning News, and Dan Abrams. And he said, and they said, how'd you get tickets? He said, got a brother with a connection.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
It has become this thing where you're going to post it on your Facebook, on your Twitter. Guess where I'm going?
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. As I said many times, too, when something is real popular, instead of being attracted to it, I am repelled from it.
You back from it.
I
want to take this all in.
Yeah, I don't jump on bandwagons, and I don't like when it gets too popular. I don't like it. And so, first of all, as being a pop culture junkie, as we both are, there is certainly a part of me that says, I do plays, I'm involved in theater, so there's something in me that certainly says I should go see this.
Yeah, there's curiosity, sure.
Yeah, but the other side of the coin is, I really don't think I'll enjoy it. I watched the Tonys, and I saw this song that they played, it's called like Shuler's Sisters or something.
Right, they did the presentation of it on TV, so you saw some of it.
And I saw that, and I'm like, there's no way I could sit for 2 hours of that. Now, to your point, the story may be interesting, and that is always a key to a good musical or even movie, is not so much doing these big archetypes that we all know about, but doing a story that has some great drama and pathos to it, but we don't know a lot. As I said, all we knew was that Alexander Hamilton was on the $10 bill.
Right.
And then he got shot by Aaron Burr. And now you find out.
To see it because all the ticket prices, it's going to take a lot of Benjamins Alexander Hamilton.
But now we find out, I'm just through osmosis, I'm finding out that Hamilton was born in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
He may have even been, born out of wedlock, which is, scandalous at that time. And then he comes here to the United States and he works his way up and he winds up becoming the first head of the U.S. Treasury, and that's why he's on the $10 bill. Some people think he was president.
Right.
So what's from a cultural standpoint of actually educating people on this important founding father figure, I think that's great. But I also think that there's going to be a lot of people, and especially here in Chicago, and that's my point, when these tickets go on sale, and it's going to be here for an open run, so who knows? It's going to be, I guarantee you, within months. Have you seen Hamilton?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, I saw Hamilton. It's amazing. And I'm wondering, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, you watch when people get their tickets, you're going to see Facebook posts.
Oh, yeah, of the ticket.
You know, go in July, whenever it starts. You know, go in September 9th, can't wait.
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff. And I think outside the private one theater, where it's, the private bank theater, where it's going to be playing, I think they should have a designated spot on the sidewalk to say, this is where you'll get your best selfie of you taking a picture
of the
marquee.
Of the marquee, saying, right.
Guess what I'm going to see? They should measure it out right now and then put like a little sign, say, you want to take a good selfie? Take it right here, and then you'll get your face in there that says, that tells the whole world, I'm going to see Hamilton.
Well, here's the thing. To your point, I'd never thought of this until right now. You know what? I think what, you know what Hamilton's going to wind up being, especially if it's so hard to get a ticket and you have to go on the secondary market and go through brokers and $500, $600 a ticket. You know what's going to happen? It's going to become one of those events like everybody says they were there.
Oh yeah.
When they really weren't, like it's some baseball guy, like, oh, I was at the game where Babe Ruth hit his seven. I was at the game when Ernie Banks hit his 500th home run or something like that, and half of the people weren't there. But everybody wants to say they were there.
They want to join in.
So what's going to happen is, to your point, people will just go up to the marquee, take a picture and go, oh, I went to see Hamilton tonight.
You know what? I think that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to save my money,
right.
And I'll just take a quick selfie, take the train downtown, take a quick selfie, going tonight, can't wait.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, oh, my God, sell into some tickets. And then the next morning when people chime in, how was it? Just going to say, you have to see it to believe it.
You've got to see it. Lin-Manuel Miranda is a genius, and my new favorite founding father is not Ben Franklin anymore. It is Alexander Hamilton.
Well, and again, getting back to the thing about it being an event, this Hamilton is going to be like going to a Blackhawk game now.
Oh, without a doubt.
Or going to a Cub game. I mean, you cannot go on Facebook any day that the Cubs are home and not see 5 or 10 people, pictures of them at the ballpark. And when it's hockey season, same thing. Got great seats through a friend, going tonight.
Okay, all you have to do, Mick, is to put your pulse on this. As we all know, when you walk around the streets of Chicago now, you see pretty much people wearing two things. They're wearing Blackhawk jerseys.
Yep.
Or they're wearing now Cub hats and Cub jerseys.
Yeah.
But I predict, after September 27th, when Hamilton premieres, you're going to see people with powdered wigs and Sergeant Pepper jackets all around downtown Chicago.
And fifes and drums.
Yes, there will be fifes and drums. People will be walking in threes. They'll have the guy with the flute, the guy with the drum, and the guy with the peg leg.
And, of course, that'll be the big Halloween costume,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but that's how you're going to know that Hamilton fever has caught Chicago. There are going to be people with powdered wigs and morning jackets and blousy pants,
right,
with long boots and ruffled shirts.
Maybe what we should do right now, Jim, is find a space and do one of those pop-up stores. Powdered wigs are us.
I just thought of that, but think about it. There are going to be people wearing Hamilton powdered wigs.
Yeah.
And here's the best part.
I've got to be honest, I don't look good in those colonial pants.
I know.
That is not going to be me. I'm a relaxed, fit jeans guy. Okay?
But here's the other scary thing is, for Chicago's reputation, I'm keeping my fingers crossed because this is the first. Chicago is a very vibrant theater town. It's got a great, big theaters as well as small theaters. Got a great history of that, and so a lot of the big shows either they start here before they go to Broadway, like the producers did and Spamalot did. Or they will get the first big touring thing, like they brought Phantom of the Opera here.
Oh, sure, back in the 80s.
Yeah, for the first time. So, but here's the thing. If you remember, the Book of Mormon came here right after Broadway, and Billy Elliot came here right after Broadway, and they were expected to be these big, long, open runs to play here for years, like cats.
Yeah.
And they didn't. They didn't. They wound up ending their runs. And so I just hope, because this Hamilton thing has become such a you know, a cultural phenomenon, and it has become a, as I said before, this kind of status symbol. Like, oh, are you into Hamilton? Of course I am. If we don't, if this show doesn't play here for 2 years, we're going to look like Midwestern rubes again.
Yeah, it'll be like, oh, you guys just didn't get it.
Yeah,
you know, what's wrong with you people?
Yeah, so that's what I. As much as I don't want Hamilton mania to take over the city, because I don't want to see people with powdered wigs walking down Michigan Avenue. The other side of the coin is I do want it to be successful, so Chicago does look like the cultural place that it is, and it's not just a flyover city like so many people think.
Well, on the other side of it, too, okay, we could look like rubes if it, you know, bombs out early. The other thing could be, well, maybe Chicago just has more discerning tastes.
Yeah, but that's how Chicago...
That's how we'd look at it.
That will be the excuse. That will not be the way the investors and Variety and Broadway Online or whatever you want to say will look at it. So that's what I'm a little afraid of. But I think there is no doubt within the next couple of months here in Chicago, we will begin to hear about people that have got tickets, who are so excited about going. And then after it opens in late September, we are going to hear about, oh, my God, have you seen Hamilton? It's the greatest thing. And I have to say, like I said, I've seen bits and pieces. I don't want to sound like I'm out of touch. I don't want to sound like I'm 100 years old. I don't want to sound like I'm some curmudgeon. But I just don't know if I could watch a whole play with that music and that whole thing and enjoy it. I just don't really like that music.
Thinking is, I think people, because of the anticipation and waiting for this and wanting to see it, I think they're going to have this built-in, I love this because look at all the time that I wasted, you know, getting online to get tickets or spending all my money and
exactly
not sending my kids to college because I'm going to take them to go see Hamilton instead.
Right.
You know, all that. The other thing I thought of as far as the value of the tickets, the status symbol, like you said, Jim, and the money value, you know, when people get held up by thieves and robbers for their iPhones, it's not going to be their iPhones anymore. It's going to be their Hamilton ticket.
Yeah, people are going to they're all of a sudden there's going to be a huge crime wave within three blocks of the private bank theater.
Exactly. It's like, I don't want your iPhone no more.
Yeah.
I want the Hamilton ticket.
People handing over their iPods. No. Give me your two. I want your two.
I'll give you the keys to my Lexus here.
Yeah. There won't even be that, hey, who's got two?
Yeah.
It's going to be, give me your two. I want them.
I'm a little concerned about that as well.
Yeah, but there's no doubt that Hamilton, and apparently, I guess this now has been it's been announced that that Lin-Manuel Miranda is leaving the Broadway production in July.
Yes. So now you're going to have two different Hamiltons, two new ones, one for Broadway and then one for
And then, as I said, they're going to have other touring things. But there's no doubt it's a phenomenon. He was very, as I said, he was very shrewd in finding a story that a lot of people didn't know. And think about, not only has it been a cultural phenomenon, just because, hey, you know, the good thing is that, as I said, the story of one of our founding fathers is getting, you know, some exposure that he would never have gotten.
Yeah.
I'm only waiting, you know, for Kanye West to do Ben Franklin. I'm sure that's, you know, Benji. He'll just call it Benji. Or Bejesus Benji, or whatever you'll call it. But so who knows what happens? But think about this too, and this is not just a joke. So for the last year or so, there was a lot of discussion about changing and putting a woman on our currency.
Right, it was a $20 bill, correct?
Well, wait, no. Initially, because Hamilton,
oh, that's right,
was not a president.
They said, let's bump him off.
They said, we'll
take on the 10.
Yeah, all the discussion was about the $10 bill.
Yeah.
And when this Hamilton thing, this phenomenon takes over, suddenly it's like, well, we can't take Hamilton off. I mean, he was this and that and this. And then here's Andrew Jackson, who was a president.
Yeah.
And people go, well, I don't even know who Andrew Jackson is.
So, Andrew, you're out.
Yeah, so now Harriet Tubman is going to be the first female on our American currency, but instead of the 10, where anyone was supposed to go, whoever they chose, but it would have been the $10 bill, because of this play.
Yeah, that influence.
They totally influenced it, And so here's Alexander Hamilton, who now his status in American history is completely changed and much higher than it ever was. And here's Andrew Jackson, and once again, I'm not stumping for Andrew Jackson, but he was a president.
Yeah.
And they go, well, let's see. Well, who else is disposable then? Well, we don't know who Andrew Jackson is either. We know who Ben Franklin is. He did that whole thing with the kite.
Yeah.
So we've got to keep him, you know, because I love electricity.
Plus, you love to say Benjamins or Benjis.
Yeah, Benjis.
I got a lot of Benjis on me.
Well, yeah. So now my question, too, is, so do we have, can I borrow a tubby from you?
You got some tubs? Spare.
I need a double tub. You know, because before a $20 bill was a sawbuck.
Yeah.
So now is it a saw tub? A tub saw? I don't know. But anyway, you know, this play actually saved him from leaving our currency.
There you go. Maybe that was the mission all along.
Well, think about this though. I mean, in terms of a historical figure, if he had been taken off our money, he certainly would have just faded.
Yeah.
Completely out of the mainstream of American American culture.
Well, the weird thing, Jim, is I just looked at one of my $10 bills in my wallet, and the guy's got dark hair and a ponytail. What's that all about?
Well, that's one of the new Hamiltons. Yeah, that's one of the new bucks. You know, you might want to get that little marker.
Yeah.
That yellow marker that they do at the store. You might want to check that. You might want to check that bill.
Yeah, that one might not be a good one to turn in. I don't want to get busted for counterfeit.
So down. So bottom line, you're going to go to Hamilton or not?
No, and the thing I wanted to say all along, Jim, is I know what a huge theater fan you are, and I know you love musical theater. I am not a musical therapy theater person. I mean, let me put it this way. The last musical play I saw was Beatlemania a long, long time ago, okay?
Well,
and for you to say you're so skeptical, that's quite a statement as to, again, not whatever how Hamilton's going to do, but just you saying, you know what, I just don't think this is for me, that's quite a statement.
Well, here's what I would do, and final thought. I would compare the phenomenon, the way the play is directed, obviously, toward a younger crowd because it uses hip-hop music, because it uses a diverse kind of cast with all the races playing traditionally. I mean, let's face it. If this was going to be a very traditional show, everybody in the show would be white, and most of the people would be men.
Right.
And that's not the case. There's people of all different races playing, whether they were white people in real life or not. It's a completely diverse cast. I would compare Hamilton in terms of its cultural impact and its cultural direction, as well as its phenomenon. I would compare it to Hair.
Okay.
Because Hair in the 60s was a radical departure from the regular musical of Rodgers and Hammerstein and all those kinds.
This is just a bunch of hippies on a stage.
Yeah, it was a bunch of hippies, and it was rock music, and it was nudity, and it was aimed at the counterculture. It was aimed at a younger group, and that's what I think is happening with Hamilton. So I would say Hamilton is basically this generation's Hair.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. And I'm sure it will be around for many years and decades, and people will like it. I said it's hard for me to say I'm going to spend a lot of money and sit there, and I might enjoy the production value and I may enjoy the story, but the music is a major part of it, and if I'm not into that music, I don't know how much I can get into it. So,
well, we'll see what happens. But again, like you said, so many young people and other people that want to be into that hip in crowd thing want to see this. And again, I think part of it is the buzz of New York and the, you know, a lot of Chicagoans say, well, New York's got it, great, then we should have it too and all that.
Well, here's the thing, Mick. Here's the thing. If I see it
in a powdered wig.
If I see it and I like it, you'll know it. Because the next time you'll see me afterward, I will be wearing a powdered wig.
And you'll be wearing the tight pants.
I will be wearing
and socks.
I will knock on your house, and I will look very colonial.
Shoes on a buckle, buckles on shoes, and I'll be like, look, trick-or-treat is like months away, bud. What are you doing?
And I'll be like, Hamilton is the most righteous founding father.
Well, the other thing about Bud Hamilton. Whenever I hear the name, I'm sorry, but this is me stuck in the 80s. All I think about is in Fast Times at Ridgemont High when Brad Hamilton breaks up that robbery at the 7-Eleven,
right.
And the robber takes off, or the one guy gets, you know, the car takes off and the robber gets stopped, and Spicoli's watching him and he goes, "Awesome! All right, Hamilton!"
Right.
So I'm stuck in the 80s, forgive me.
Oh, okay? No problem. Well, like I said, all hail. And I don't even know. I mean, even at the end of the Tonys, some guy made a reference to one of the lines in the play.
Uh-huh.
He said, like, "In the greatest city in the world." And then I didn't know that that was from a song in Hamilton. So that went completely over my head. And I was like, wow, I am really not in with the scene.
I was going to say, young reference lost on old curmudgeon. Yes.
Right, exactly. Thank you, Mick, for another fun segment of the Pop Culture Club. Mick Kaler joining me. And I've actually run a little over, but that's a great thing about a podcast. Nobody cares. Hopefully you're interested and you listen to the whole thing. But I want to thank you for clicking on to episode 5 of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic every week on WGN Plus, a new episode. Whatever it is, fun, silly, serious, irreverent, what it ultimately is Elton Jim Toronto, and that's me. From the end of from the end of the web to your screen, until next time.